Hello, and welcome to the Plugged In Podcast, where we talk with founders and CEOs in order to bring you the real stories of failures and triumphs, highs and lows they've experienced on their journey toward success. We will go in depth with our guests to give you insights into how they have taken an idea from concept to realization, making those first key hires to building the right team, scaling revenues, how they overcame obstacles, and much more as we learn how they achieve success. This is the podcast that you want to subscribe to if you want to learn how to succeed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Plugged In. I'm Ellie Mandelbaum, an industry veteran who decided to do more than just listen to podcasts, but actually start one in which I interview people much smarter than me. In this episode, we're speaking with Omer Kilyov, the co-founder and CEO of Innoviz, which was founded in 2016 and has done a tremendous amount in the 3 years. Innoviz develops and markets low-cost, small-sized LiDAR systems designed to enable the mass commercialization of autonomous vehicles. We will get into exactly what that means later on in the episode. Omer has spent over 18 years driving cutting-edge technologies from inception to commercialization. Before founding Innoviz, Omer led the system and product definition efforts at Consumer Physics, building the world's first handheld molecular sensor for mobile devices. Previous roles include leading the system, architecture, and engineering teams at Bitendo, acquired by STMicro, and Anobit, acquired by Apple. Omer spent 7 years in elite technology unit of the Intelligence Corps of Israel Defense Forces, where he served in leading critical roles involving large-scale technological systems. Omer, welcome to the show. I hope I covered everything. It seems like I did. If not, why don't you fill in the blanks on your background?
Sure. Actually, I think you did a good job. So I started my career in the army, where I served as an electric engineer and developing different kind of technologies. It was quite an amazing experience. It's one of those places you become addicted to work on very exciting things that you wake up every morning feeling very connected to what you're doing, and that made a huge impact on me. This is why when I left, which was very difficult for me to leave because I really loved where I was. I was only looking to work on things that got me very excited and, you know, were interesting enough and made impact.
What was your first job, after the IDF, and did you learn anything from the first job that has stayed with you today?
Sure. So the first startup, I was interested in joining an early stage startup because I knew that one day I would like to have my own. So it was interesting for me to join a startup at the early stage and learn about, the difficulties and see how the team grows. My first job was a system architect, working with the customers, working with the engineers, defining the system, trying to understand a little bit how to work with the environment. And I think the best point taken from Anobit was the importance of bringing very high level of talent into a startup. It was very clear that each one of the team is a very unique contributor. I of course also, I think there are things there that I think that I took on the other direction. Maybe I would say things that I knew that when I will have a startup would be deep different. The work culture was a bit hard. People were working around the clock regardless of exactly what is the importance. The priority was only one bit, which is always high. And I think it caused many really good people to leave. And this is something that I'm trying to do differently at Innoviz.
That's good to know. And we'll definitely touch upon that as well, the work culture and company culture. So when did you know you want to start and build a company? I mean, before you got here, you went through a couple of companies, And so, when did you realize, okay, I did my time. Now it's the right time for me to start.
So since Anobit, I joined two other startups. In both, I collected my my experience in understanding exactly how startups can grow and the needs. And in the last startup, it was clear for me that my time is now. I had an urge to do it. I felt the market is available, and I think is endorsing innovation. And I thought I didn't want to miss the opportunity. I was very worried that some kind of macro dynamics would make it difficult to raise money. So I literally threw the wheel out of the out of the wagon. Literally, that's what we do here. But it was for me, it was an opportunity I didn't want to miss. I thought I was ready, and I didn't want the market to change.
Got it. So, how did you come up with it, right? So were the previous companies you were at, were they in the same vertical? Was it not? Like, where'd you, you said, okay, I don't want to miss an opportunity, but you have to have come up with an idea.
So I had about 30 ideas. I had a list of ideas, which I went through with different friends. But this idea is something I carried with me for several years. The second startup I was part of was developing a Pico projector. It's a laser MEMS-based video projector, which this is where I got to know about the benefits of using MEMS. I was really overwhelmed with the opportunities, and I was thinking about how to use it also for 3D sensing, not only for projection of images. But in 2012, that's when I was in Bitendo, everybody were very focused on developing technologies for one platform, which is the mobile phone. There was no any other platform that was in the mass market that was relevant. So the size of the product that I had in my mind was too large. It's not something that can be in a phone. So I was thinking it's not interesting enough. 4 years later, when it was one of the ideas, and I knew there was a good fit between this idea and the LiDAR for the autonomous driving, and this is when I thought I had something good to move forward with.
Good. So before we get into Innoviz a second, what was something you failed at early on that bothered you, and did you overcome it? And if so, how did you overcome it?
It's a good question. So I think my disappointments in the past were usually coming from lack of trust in management. This is like any other person that works in a company. Usually people leave when they lose trust with people that are managing the company. So I think I felt that it's time for me to move forward. I was always a sole player, joined startup at very early stage because it was important for me to become an influencer. But at some point, I felt that there is a ceiling, a glass ceiling that doesn't allow me to navigate as I believe. So I felt that it's now my time to do my own mistakes.
All right, so you came up with the idea for Innoviz, and how did you take it from concept to reality, right? So it's in your head, right? So you have to build a prototype. You either find a co-founder or find some other people to work on it. But generally, you like to bounce ideas off, right? Founders are, you very rarely find one sole co-founder.
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
Well, our story is very strange.
It's always good to hear.
Because, the convertible loan I got for this startup, I got it about 1 week after I left my last startup. It was very, very quickly. I met with Zohar Zisapel, who is our chairman and our first investor. I told him about my idea. Most of my partners were still working on somewhere else. I was the only one that was really full time for 1 week. I think what got Zohar very interested was an interesting problem to solve, and most definitely something that is a huge gap in the industry. And my background and the background of my co-founders, which I know them very well because I worked with them in the army. They are all, from my unit. So with some, I actually, shared an apartment at some point. So we had a very good, relationship.
Got it. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about the technology, right? So LiDAR, Right. So for the people who, and you know, our audience is different and vast. And don't forget, if you're, you know, listening to like, Plugged In on iTunes, and, Google Play, always helps. But you know, talk a little bit more about, you know, LiDAR, you know, what problem you're solving.
Sure. So LiDAR is basically some kind of a 3D camera. Okay. It's a laser scanner that emits light in order to see. And the way that it sees the world is by pulsing lights at different obstacles. And by the time of light, the time that the light travels, go and forth and back, you can measure the range. Today, traditional LiDARs are, you know, very straightforward solutions where you have multiple lasers mounted on a wheel, which is spinning and just shooting light as the wheel turns, and you get a 3D image of the environment. Now, those solutions are extremely expensive because of the number of components. They are unreliable because of the weight, and they are, you know, also very big and unreliable, etc. So, you know, it's, and, you know, also not good enough. I mean, the resolution and range that was available 2 or 3 years ago was far from being anything relevant. Now, there are many companies out there that, you know, recognize the gap. I think the only difference between them and in Innoviz, which our strategy was a bit different. You know, with the willingness to pay for LiDARs, which is tens of thousands of dollars, you know, it is obvious that you can do something better than the solutions that were available 2 or 3 years ago. Even the company that was leading the, you know, the industry, Velodyne, has improved significantly their product, but still very expensive and still very big. We are the only company that we're targeting a solution that not only improves the LiDAR, also reduces the size and power and cost. It took us more time to get to the market, but time to market was, you know, not as important for, you know, the first 2 years, because the most autonomous driving series production are actually planned for 2021. So we, you know, we were shooting for doing something that we believed could meet the overall requirements by the industry. You know, it's funny, but, you know, Innoviz has one nomination by BMW end of 17. We were less than, you know, 2 years as a company with a prototype, but with a very clear strategy on how to solve this problem. And this is what, after a year of due diligence, a lot of workshops with BMW, which I'm sure you can appreciate, BMW is maybe one of the most technical OEMs out there, got them to believe that our solution is the right one for mass production. And we're still heading for mass production in July 2021.
So you started, right? So, and I appreciate that. The background. So you started in 2016. You a week, pretty much, you got investment right away, and then a week after, you brought some people on. So it took you about a year and a half or so to build the prototype, right? And so, how many? You know, how did you start hiring, and how many people did you grow up? Because again, you're only 3 years old now, and how many people do you have today?
So we actually hired many people from the first day.
Okay.
Before we had an office, we hired about 20 people. Because it was clear that we need to run fast. And also, you know, it's much more difficult to bring the talent, you know, to a company that is larger. So you want to get that roll of kind of like a snowball effect. So, you know, when you come with a very early stage startup, it's relatively easy to bring a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And once you bring a lot of talent, it has an effect of a magnet to other talent. So even if you're a team of 100 people, but everyone is known, he's a superstar. And, you know, once you have that talent, you also move fast and you show result. So everything is moving in the same direction.
So how did you... What qualities did you look for? Right? Because you're hiring a lot of people. You wanted to create a certain culture, I'm sure. Because again, from what you said previously as well, right? You wanted to build a trust in there. You wanted to, so, you know, you're hiring people quickly. And two parts to it. A lot of companies don't hire quickly because it just burns a lot of capital, right? So, you know, was it easy after your first convertible note? How long did it take you to raise your second round?
No, so our first convertible note came after about 1 week, but the first $9 million actually came 2 weeks later. So we raised $9 million from day one, which helped us to move very quickly and also take a lot of risk. You know, we actually started by looking for to raise about $4 million, but very quickly people were throwing money that way. So we, you know, we decided to take more and try to move faster. We hired more people. We took some, I would say, some risks that we knew that if they would be paid off, then, you know, it will, you know, help us jump very quickly. And there were several, like we saw, we you know, we said it, like we have three coins of $1 million each that we can make a bet on something that might get us a head start, and they all paid off. So, you know, because there are really smart people here, and they're not really, they're taking risk, but they know how to manage it. And that led us to move very quickly. Our first prototype was less than 6 months later.
Wow.
It was not 1.5 years.
Okay.
It was 6 months later, we were already able to demonstrate our early stage prototype. That got a lot of trust from the tier ones that we were discussing. They were overwhelmed that our ability to move so fast. And that was what led, you know, Magna to step in, because they saw that Innoviz has a good team that knows how to deliver. They have a very, I would say, very interesting technology, which has a good target. And in CES of 17, we were the only solid-state LiDAR.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing. Everybody came from anywhere. We came out of nowhere. We're already showing a demo of a solid-state LiDAR. And that, I think CES of 17, 1 year after the company was founded, we met with a lot of executives from the automotive market. And that led to personal relationship with some that led to programs later. And this is something that is much harder today. I mean, imagine today you need to go through circles of scouters and engineers until you get to the point that you meet someone, not to say executive. At the time that we started, it was, you know, we had the chance to talk with very executive people in different companies, and you know, we built trust about, you know, showing the you know, how fast we moved, and we continued to move fast. And we came back from 2017, and there were many programs that started to roll out. BMW was the most aggressive because we knew that they want to make a decision by the end of the year. And it was a very strategic project for us. Like, all the company was working mostly on winning BMW, because we knew that if we managed to go through the BMW due diligence, you know, it's a home run. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And once we were nominated, now we are the only LiDAR, you know, only solid state LiDAR with a design win and with BMW. It's gave us very high credibility to other OEMs that are now looking for solutions. So, you know, we are at the top of the list of many companies.
So how do you find BMW? And then I'll go into a little bit more, because I want to try and, you know, talk more a bit about the, you know, if there was a sales process, right? So the courting of the big companies, right? The BMWs or the other big, you know, car manufacturers, right? How do you meet them? Did you get an intro? Did they hear about you? Did you seek them out?
No, so it's funny again. The first time we were connected with BMW came from a personal relation, like a friend from Owen, wasn't like one of the founders. He had a colleague from school, which later worked at BMW, and he connected us with the team at Munich. And then me and Owen flew to Munich. And it was I remember that day because we, you know, two Israeli guys stepping into Munich, and I saw the team there looking at us. And I remember them looking at us, like hearing us out. And my sense was that it's like, we are a headache.
Sorry.
who are those two Israeli guys, came out from nowhere, just started their company, coming to tell us that they have the best solution in the world, and like, we know, like, the solutions out there. And it felt like our solution was too good to disregard. And it was before the CES event.
Okay.
And after we, you know.
So this is before, this is but like the fall of 17.
16.
16.
Yeah.
The 16, sorry.
It was
yeah.
in October, I think, of yeah. 16. It was before CES. We told them that we're going to show a demo at CES that they said we don't be, like, we can't believe it can happen.
Yeah.
Because it's too good. I mean, you just started. We don't believe. Like, they had also bad experience with other larger startups, and I remember they were super negative. And after we showed our demo at CES, mm-hmm. then we saw, you know, how things start to escalate very strongly. You know, we started a very thorough process of industrialization and due diligence and technology due diligence.
So, you know, how long did that take, right? I mean, so the first part is, I mean, I guess it was the expectation of two Israeli guys coming into their office, and how many people were sitting, how many people were in BMW with you? Like, was it you and 20 people? Was it you and Oren and two people?
No, it was about, I think, two people. Actually, the same two people.
Okay.
Those two people are still leading the activity with mm-hmm. us. We are really good friends now. but I remember the body language was very, very
so they had low expectations when you came in.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Interesting. And so were they wowed after you demonstrated, like after
yeah,
you demoed?
Sure. I mean, we had a very impressive demo. Nothing that anyone was able to show in a very short time. You know, it's, and since then we also made a lot of improvements, and our next generation is going to be even, you know, 40 times better. It really is an outstanding product.
Got it. So you know, how do you then? So BMW, what happens with the other? So you went to CES and a lot of interest, etc. Did you build out a sales team here to focus on them? Did you just take some of your original team members that you came in, started pushing them towards, you know, partnerships? How did you? No, start managing.
No, so, you know, after talking with different OEMs, it was clear that the only one who's really planning to make a decision by the end of the year is BMW.
Okay.
Others were still waiting to see what's going on. And, like, we knew the only one who's really conducting a process is BMW. So we made all our intention there, really. It was 100%.
Were you worried?
Worried? At some point, no. Because we, you know, we knew the competitive landscape, and we knew that there is really not a good comparable. We knew that it will require BMW to take a leap of hope, you know, on this, like believing in the team,
mm-hmm.
because we were still very young, had no knowledge in automotive. Our product was mostly on like paper. Like, there are many things that we've done, but, you know, it's you know, we had some mile to go. But I think that there is a very strong like R&D team here at Innoviz, and if you want to, and BMW is very innovative as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super impressed by BMW. They are built in a structure which is relatively different than other OEMs, because they are also like a startup. Their organizational structure allows them to manage risks. You know, usually OEMs, which usually are followers, they will never risk SOP, start of production,
mm-hmm.
by using some kind of you know, new technology, because the risk is huge. And BMW is very known for doing that, and it's because they have the knowledge and the experience how to lead new technologies to the market. For each team at Innoviz, we have a counter team at BMW that is working, you know, side by side, making sure is that, you know, everything is by, you know, is done by the process that is needed, because you need to, at the end of the day, it needs to be functional, safe product. So it's about, you know, we're developing three chips, so all those chips require to be designed, and, you know, it's also about how you design, it's also about how you document. It's how you manage decisions, how you document changes.
Yeah,
it's a huge overhead, it's very difficult for a startup, you know, that is, you know, still designing the product, but, you know, needs to follow very strict rules if you want to meet the automotive grade. And, you know, the talent here is people that came from very innovative companies. Sometimes it's, you know, very difficult for them to, you know, to restrain them. Mm-hmm. But we're moving very, very well. And I think there is a good collaboration. We learn a lot from BMW. There are many workshops. I mean, sometimes we complain about workshops because we don't have time, but we learn a lot. We try also to share that knowledge with others. We're planning to do some kind of an open automotive day at Innoviz soon to, you know, for the different automotive companies in Israel. Because I think that there are many things that we've learned that could help others.
I mean, so there are a couple of things in there. So one is, you mentioned that you guys didn't really have a strong background in automotive, right? So did you find that as a hindrance? Did you find that as an obstacle when you're trying to, you know, build your system, or no. It just something that, okay, we just don't, but, you know, we'll get around that.
Yeah, it's another, I see it as another, another constraint to add, you know, it requires a lot of attention, and we've brought people that are capable to have that attention. So I think, you know, engineering and you know, is usually, it's theory of constraints. You know, there are always different constraints. Here you have another different constraint. In Israel, you can't find a lot of experience in automotive. That's fairly new. I think that's one of the benefits we can offer our engineers here, because I think they have a first-hand experience working with the leading OEMs. And I think going forward, the automotive space will be very important here in Israel. And to get that tag of automotive experience is valuable for people. And I think in Innoviz we can offer that. Working with BMW is something that is super, you know, important.
Do you feel that you guys are, you know, the grandfather of the space in Israel? Like, again, you've been early. I mean, again, I'm using that as just a figure of speech in the sense that you're the elder statesman, right? I mean, you know.
Mobilai is maybe the grandfather.
Yes.
Yeah, the sexy.
Yes. But again, I mean, you were saying that, you know, from what you were just saying, that you want to create like an open day for the auto. You're looking to create a community where, you know, I don't recall, you know, if Mobilai did that for the community itself.
I don't know. I get approached almost once a week, at least, from one company asking me something about, you know, one issue in automotive. Mm-hmm. Very general. I get meetings. I try to help, but I think that you know, we could be more helpful if we do something more, you know, organized. And in general, I always believe in sharing. So I think this is something that you know, we are happy to do. I think Israel has a huge opportunity. Sorry, mm-hmm. Huge opportunity in becoming a leading automotive, you know, sector. I think one of the problems we still have in Israel is around industrialization. I would urge Israel to invest more in bringing production technologies for automotive. You know, Innoviz, we have today a production line in the north, mm-hmm. in Haifa, but it's not an automotive grade. There is no automotive grade facility in Israel. For us, it's really, you know, our production line is going to be fully automated. You know, basically, you would say there is no value in moving the production line from Israel to China. The problem is there is no facility that is already automotive grade, you know. So it's not coming from cost. You know, the cost to produce it in Israel and the cost to produce it in China would be probably even higher in China and more difficult. If Israel would bring the knowledge, and it doesn't exist today, it will allow it to leverage more strongly on the technology that it's developed here and it's going to be produced somewhere else. It's a shame.
Got that. So a couple of things just going into, we're at 30 minutes now, so we have about another 5-10 minutes. So, you know, you were at 20 and you've, you know, building your company culture and hiring, did you put certain, you know, things in place when you started getting busy? It's hard for you. Again, you're how many people do you have today?
240.
Yeah. So at a certain time, do you meet everyone, or you meet everyone? So,
yeah, everyone.
Wow, that's a that's a challenge.
Yeah, it's really important for me. I think keeping the I would say the atmosphere and the way of working to talk about, you know, the way that we want people to work with each other. The importance of you know, understanding you know, what each can contribute, something that is super important for me. I think what drove me as an engineer in startups was always to always see a very wide angle and to get transparency on what's going on in the startup. I think that's basically why people join startups, because they can do very interesting things in like big companies. But when they are deciding to join a startup, it's because they have some kind of a dream that they like, even if they are doing something very specific, on the day-to-day, they are exposed to many other things. And I want to keep that. Like, the transparency is something that is important for me. On the weekly, we have weekly meetings for the company. We always talk about everything, business, you know, business discussions, R&D situations, travels, etc. Like, I believe this is what I can offer people. Like, by letting them to know what's going on beyond what they're doing on the daily, it's giving them what they were, you know, asking to get.
Yeah. And what do you want for your employees, right? So they come, you know, you're building them a great environment, but is there something that you want for them to stay, right? You I mean, there's a loyalty factor, which it seems that you're building with the transparency part, which is definitely, I think, most people definitely like to see. But, you know, is there something that you would say, okay, you know, we see the writing on the wall, you know, 5 years out or whatever it is, you know, what do you want to give to your employees?
So I would like to see each with a path to grow in the company. I believe that people decide to leave a company when they see that path is locked or blocked because of their boss. Now, this is why we keep a lot of attention to the managers. We believe that, you know, it's very important to train the managers, because that will affect tremendously. That will affect tremendously, you know, people, you know, connectivity and self no empowerment to do what you need. I actually spend quite a lot of time during my day walking around in the office to talk with people. I believe it's my best way to learn about what's going on and actually read people, like to sense people and see where what is, you know, what's going on, what's holding them back, you know, see if I can help them in some way. This is my best way to be connected to the ground. You know, my VP R&D, you know, Owen Buskila, he manages the R&D. The R&D is the biggest organization here. It's 140 people. He doesn't have the, I would say, the, you know, the pleasure to decide to focus on something, because he has like 15 teams that he needs to meet everyone, make sure everything goes well. I have the ability to decide where I want to focus, and I want to use it, because that way I'm helping him and I'm helping the team. And we made some organizational changes in the last few months. We did some restructuring of the R&D to help with coping with several programs and with, you know, making better use of people. And, you know, there are obviously some people that always want to do something else. We decided to freeze the for 2 months the hiring and saying, okay, so now let's see where it hurts, you know. And now we're moving back again to hire people, because now we feel much better, you know, where there is a need, and not necessarily like hire another person. The CFO, Eldar, we travel to many places around the world. You know, it's in many ways we try to find those financial arms that could help us to grow. Our KPI was to find financial VCs that would write a check that is relatively small to what they are used to, because we wanted to come out very strong from the run with you know, groups that have very large pockets in any case for the future. Our second round was mostly strategic, and that's something that is great to get an endorsement by the industry, but it's not very strong in regards to financial stability. You need to have partners that have financial value by the success of the company. So for us, it was more focused on financial VCs rather than strategic. Our strategic from the second round obviously participated, but we are mostly focusing on VCs. Since China is a market that once me and Eldar visited there for several times, we were overwhelmed by the energy. You know, we met with many companies and we saw that there is a huge demand for technology, and the government is really subsidizing and pushing everyone to move very fast. I think it's a very important market, and coming from our second round where we also had one investor from China, we saw how you can leverage from it. So that investor, Glory Ventures, they really helped us in China. So mm-hmm. we knew that if we want to grow in China, we need to bring a very strong VC power from China. And we brought that from China Merchant and Shenzhen Capital, very strong VCs in China. We have also other VCs from the US, but you know, it's a mixture.
Got it. So, I mean, how do you make money? I mean, that's the, you know, so, you know, right now, I mean, you're not.
But is that important?
Yeah. But, you know, what's the revenue model? Like, are you licensing? Are they paying?
We're selling LiDARs.
Yeah, exactly. Really? Selling, so is it per car? You know, is it based on a set fee?
So it depends on the program. Some programs require one LiDAR. Some programs require several LiDARs. We get paid by the number of LiDARs. We are also developing the computer vision on top of the LiDAR. For example, in BMW, we're not only selling our LiDAR, we're also selling our computer vision, meaning the perception layer, the software, on top of the LiDAR. You know, the LiDAR provides you raw image, 3D image, that doesn't make any sense unless you, you know, translate it to something you can work with, which mm-hmm. is, you know, the object list that you are used to see from Mobileye. You want to have the same from a LiDAR. It's funny, but, you know, people are talking about the gap in the industry on LiDARs, but there is another very large gap in regards to the perception layer on top of LiDAR. Because, you know, if you think that you can apply the same algorithms on top of a LiDAR that you use for cameras, you're totally wrong. It's a very different type of sensor, very different attributes, very different approach, and you need to collect different data for it. It's a huge effort. And, you know, Mobileye is a company that is developing computer vision on top of cameras. Mm-hmm. And there is a need for computer vision on top of LiDARs. And without it, most of the OEMs we work with, they can't actually use the LiDAR. I mean, it's a, you know, they can't work with it. So today, Innoviz is not only offering LiDARs, we are also offering the computer vision. There is a big team here that is working on it.
Got it. All right, so we're going to transition a little bit out. So did you have a mentor, someone that you turned to for advice, or you didn't really have one through your path to where you are? Even now, do you have someone that you go to if you have questions, you're not sure, you want to bounce ideas off of?
I find myself consulting a lot with my partners, my management. I really appreciate each one of them, and I think each one has a different vision in some cases, which is very interesting to follow. And I learn a lot. I actually really learn a lot from the vision of each. At this point of the company, it's very hard to find someone who can really add value by the amount of details. I mean, in the beginning, yes, I was consulting a lot with Zohar Zisapel. You know, he's the number one mentor. Yeah. But, now with the business complexity, it's very hard to find a mentor that can really dive deep into the details, but we are very diversified in ideas here in the management. We have Ronan Lovinger, who used to be leading the operations at Mellanox.
Mm-hmm.
He's a super smart guy. I don't know what we've done without him. He has a very strong vision how to industrialize products, and he knows that I'm a, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, startup guy. Yeah. He's trying to restrain me mm-hmm. in many ways, but also, you know, other people from the management, they have different approaches, and that's sometimes difficult, but sometimes it's, you know, it's difficult is good, you know.
I hear that. So, what did you want to be when you were 15?
It's hard to say. I mean, I always dreamed that I will have my own company. I didn't. It was something I was very eager to do. And you know, before I left my last job, I told my wife that I'm going to try. I told her that I'm going to do 1 year of you know, without a salary, and she needs to, you know, accept it, ask her, and she were very open about it. Lucky for me and her, I mean, 1 week after I started, yeah. I raised $1 million, and 2 weeks later, nine. So I didn't have much opportunity to live like bootstrapping.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clear to me that is something I want to do. I always was a very passionate, you know, sole player in any of the startup I was one, and you know, it was something I wanted to do.
Is there a habit that you do, a daily habit that keeps you on top of your game?
Try to sleep sometimes. Not a lot, but a habit. No, actually, I'm trying to do some sport sometimes.
Not everyone has.
I'm trying.
But
trying.
Okay. And is there something that, you know, a productivity aspect to that keeps you more productive? Like, you know, do you believe in inbox zero? You know, is there something that you really, you know, as a CEO that really, you know, you couldn't do without?
People laugh at me that my response time is usually below 1 minute. That's a bad habit I have. And I sleep over things a lot. Like I'm a problem solver, which sometimes is, you know, something my management is, you know, hate. But I'm really I'm a problem solver. I love like taking the problem and trying to solve. No, I'm trying to get synchronized every day. As I said, I'm trying a lot to find free space in my calendar to go in the office and mm-hmm. talk with people, see in my eyes and mm-hmm. listen to people and feel their, I don't know, you know, where they feel cautious or I don't know, worried about. So
last question. So what's the end game for you? All right, for Innovis, I mean, are you looking to, you know, grow and be, you know, on the top of the heap in Israel in the auto space and acquire companies? Are you looking just to maintain where you are and just, you know, your partnership with BMW will take its course?
So,
There might not be an answer. I'm just asking.
No, we're very focused now on winning more business. There are many programs that we're working on. Now, actually, as we speak, I got a good feedback, which I'm happy to see. You know, very focused on winning more business, you know, becoming a world leader in LiDARs for autonomous car. You know, we don't see ourselves as a, you know, company that sells LiDARs. It's not interesting to sell a LiDAR. It's interesting to solve a problem, you know, and we're very focused on trying to understand the difficulties of our customers, how we can do more. If there are things that we will see that will add value, we will add it, okay? And we have a very talented team here. They can do many more things than that. But today, I think that, you know, our focus is right. But once we'll solve this problem, and I hope not much time from today, we will go to other areas. Could be possibly by, you know, growing through acquisitions or, you know, doing more products. I think Innovase has a good opportunity to become one of the major players in autonomous driving.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's great to talk to you. And for those listening, make sure you like us on iTunes and on Google Play. Thank you so much.
Love this episode of the Plugged In Podcast? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It's very much appreciated. Thank you.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.